Greetings to you all from Harvard area. Here recording a short video. Let's see how short. Sending a report, our bearing testimony to what has been my first week in Harvard. In my personal case, as part of the Hindu monastic program at the Harvard Divinity School. So today is officially 1 week since I have arrived here to Boston, Massachusetts, and there has been a lot in this week. So much newness, almost an overdose of newness that I have survived to tell the story. A beautiful overdose of newness. So I like to share a few of my experiences to try to, those who know me, to bring you here with me and make you part of the adventure and the journey, to have your company, your prayers, your well-wishing. And so we can all learn and grow together as well, because for me, this is not a separate project. At the same time, it's something that I trust and I hope will nourish deeply my heart personally, but hopefully that can also overflow in connection to others. So it all began 1 week ago when I arrived here. First time I'm coming to Boston, to this area at all. First coming, I'm joining not only Harvard, first time I'm joining university, even college. I joined the ashram when I was 19 years old, and I never went to college, I never went to university. All my studies and education happened in the context of my ashram life, my monastic life, my Shastric studies, scriptural studies, but also studying different works, including academic works. It's funny because in time I got to develop many friendships with different academics. They came to my Free Radical podcast. Many of them have endorsed my books. We have become friends. I have even talked, especially in one university in Buenos Aires, but in others as well, many times, especially in this one in Buenos Aires. I gave like 5 courses, but I've never been in a college or a university as a student. So this is the very first time, and it's suddenly in Harvard. So that's a very interesting leap, which I'm grateful for, with all the challenges that that may bring. As I spoke with a few scholar friends who told me, that may be challenging, that may be new, that may be unsettling. There will be lots of growth. As is usually happened, we grow the most outside of our comfort zone. So this first week, I've definitely been outside of my comfort zone lots of times. In the healthiest possible ways, please do not misread me, just because of being in a situation that is absolutely new. Now, and there is so much newness to it. The place, the area, the people, basically everyone, someone that I'm getting to know for the first time, the academic dynamics, the language, the technicalities of how to get a book, request a book, or go to the library, gain access to that, and renting the room, and so many things, which is kind of landing into a new planetary system. A friend of mine told me it's like taking a land animal and throwing the animal into the ocean. And now the animal has to adapt to the ocean, adapt to those new waters, adapt to that new language and ecosystem and ways of being and doing. Which, of course, doesn't mean everything has been absolutely entirely different and unrelatable. There's a lot of beautiful things that I already can relate to, that are already aligned to my way of thinking and feeling, if not most, but just the packaging has changed. So naturally that brings some discomfort, which is a healthy area again for growing. And I will be sharing some notes that I took during these days in that connection, which are very, very interesting material and insights and pieces of wisdom shared by different faculty and staff. So yeah, I arrived two days, and after that started what they call the orientation week. Day one with the international students, those coming from abroad. So I was one of them, though I'm in a non-degree program officially, but I'm part of the program itself. So we met, we were like, I don't know, not that many, like 50, if I'm not recalling, or maybe less than 50, 30. So it was an introduction to the university and to the health system and to the, lots of supportive advice, lots of departments for people who may feel overwhelmed with the newness of it all, not only Swami Padmanabha, for sure. And I know in my personal case, I'm coming from a more relaxed background in the sense that I'm not here coming to pursue the degree with the pressure of having a degree, with the pressure of then with that degree, basically earning, making a lifestyle out of that and earning and depending and maybe having to pay debts for the money I'm investing in my studies, which I assume is the case for many students. So I can definitely empathize with the pressure that may create. What to speak on top when winter comes and it gets snowy and it becomes night by 3 p.m. We'll talk about that later whenever that's the moment. So in my case, it has been so far quite a more smoother ride in that sense. So I want not to victimize myself here. On the contrary, but acknowledge the privilege and the chance I'm receiving here, even in the face of some discomfort that is necessary and healthy. So day one was this International Orientation Day for the international students. So we had a walk in the library and other rooms, and it's like a whole campus for those who have been here. Of course, it's like a small city and there are different campuses and places and libraries and museums that I've been exploring also these recent days. But after day one, we have a three-day orientation for all the students, especially, of course, then the international ones, but those who come from the U.S. as well. And in total, the group were like 150 in the Harvard Divinity School we're talking here, because Harvard has many other departments of technology and business and this and that in other parts of the campus. But here, this whole event was for the HDS, as they will call it, Harvard Divinity School. So it was a three-day intensive to be welcoming the students, to welcome the students to the campus and to orient them to the different places and departments and mission, ambition of Harvard. And again, lots of beautiful pieces of insight, lots of empathy and support from the faculty and teachers. But it was intense. It was 3 days, almost 7 hour nonstop series of programs, one after another. You can hear my clock alarm sounding in my back. Time to take some water and some medicine that I already took. So it was beautiful. It was lots of information, lots of content. Again, in my case, all new. So the whole system, the whole brain and neural pathways were stretching. You could feel it even physically, not only internally, but physically, how the whole system was kind of like stretching to adapt in so many ways. More flexibility, more capacity to accommodate, lots of diversity, also lots of pluralism, right? Because I'm in a place where probably, I don't want to say I'm the person which with the least experience in terms of college and university, probably not, but probably yes. And suddenly in Harvard, I'm a monastic with a different background and lifestyle and vocation from many others. I have, comparison to most of the students, a different age. Not all, but some. I'm coming from another country, from another background. Not to say it's better, it's worse, it is what it is. But yeah, I could feel day after day the whole system trying to adjust and to digest the content and the information, and many of those things went above my head because it was too much information, as many notes as I tried to take. And they themselves made it clear. They are not expecting one to fully integrate everything they were saying in those three thick days. But it was nice, but it was challenging. On the second day, I felt at one point I couldn't attend the last two meetings because I felt at one point overwhelmed. Like it was too much, and even some feelings of not belonging to the place came. Again, in a natural way. In one sense, I knew in advance some of the things will happen, but then you need to be there and go through the experience to experience them. And to deal with them and to sit with discomfort, basically the discomfort of not fitting in, but hopefully finding belonging and accepting yourself in the overwhelming bewilderment of learning a new language, basically a new dynamics, a new lifestyle. Again, being in a room with roommates, it's a new experience as well. So having some good sense of self-compassion and self-care is one of the people there sense mentioned also, not only engaging in maintaining self-care, but acute self-care. Maintaining self-care will be kind of basic survival stuff, trying to go deeper than that and trying to hold space for all that and see myself with self-compassion And I was able, of course, to share my bewilderment with some brothers and sisters. And immediately, as you can imagine, or very quickly after that, lots of relief came. The importance of bearing witness to other like-minded, like-hearted soul, and to be seen and heard for who you are and share vulnerably. That's basically, as simple as it sounds, it's miraculous as it is. So very quickly came relief, very quickly came hope and strength and more affirmative voices in terms of, yes, I can do it. I know I can do it. It's not that I will collapse after 3 days or after a week. Though the class have not started yet, they will be starting next Wednesday. So this is just week one that I'm sharing, and I may not be able to share every week a report. Let's see how the workload and the dynamics here unfold. But I will like to continue sharing as much as I can, at least weekly, or maybe if not fortnightly. So next week, the class are starting. I'm also have spent some time getting to know the professors. They introduced their courses a few days ago. So you get to know them in person. I got to meet in person Francis Clooney, Professor Francis Clooney, who is a Jesuit priest and at the same time an academic in Hinduism, to say the more generally and more particularly Sri Vaishnavism. We are friends, I will say. He came to my podcast, as you may know. He endorsed my third book. And he's my academic advisor during these two semesters. So I feel very, very glad and very blessed to have his company. So we met first time in person and share about the programs and some of the courses I'm thinking, still deciding which ones I will take. A few of them are almost confirmed. So, but I won't share anything yet, because I will spend the next week assisting to different courses. And then we have a few days to, after getting to know the teachers and the teaching modalities, to decide which ones we will take. But I'm trying to make it as diverse as possible. There may be something connected to, quote unquote, Hinduism in general terms, Christianity, mystical Christianity, poetry, something more of a training in academic thinking and writing, some other things in connection to, we'll see. Again, some of the courses are the spiritual lives of the, which was the title, of the non-believers or something like that. And a few other things. So we'll see. We'll see how that goes. I'm now trying to go through the reading material for those courses to arrive to which one of the classes relatively prepared. But for me, yeah, the main experience these days has been landing here, finding myself here, and learning to discover new versions of me by being in a completely new environment. Because that's an important point. Like Srila Siddharth will say, we are products of the environment. So we are put in a certain environment, and a new version of ourselves emerges, which was previously unknown to everyone, including ourselves, just by the sheer fact that we haven't been in that particular environment before. So this is a very unique, different environment that I've never been before. So I can imagine a very unique, different side of who I am and all that I can be will emerge, with all that it entails. No, not only a new side in its brilliant, beautiful, creative, inspired way, hopefully so, but also a new side would maybe fragile and with doubts and with crisis and with overwhelmingness. I've already had a trailer of that a few days ago, and I'm thrilled at the unknowingness of it all. No? And I trust the process, and I trust that for some reason I'm here, despite the fact that I chose to come here, but also for some reason I'm here, and for some reason I will be confronted with things that I need to see about me in any direction possible. And I trust the process and the environment and the dynamics will give lots of learning, lots of food for thought, food for heart, food for growth that I can then naturally extend into all my relationships, to all my relationships, to all my relationships, like they will say in the Native American traditions. So that's something that I look forward to, to discover that new layers that will emerge from, again, uncertainty, new learning, new modalities of learning, new ways of thinking, new ways of questioning, even one's own tradition, new ways to bring doubts, critical thinking, new perspectives, and diversity. Again, just being in a campus with people most of my life, as much as I like to consider myself an open minded person and a broad-minded person. I hope I'm proven wrong being here in the sense of realizing that you can always get more broad-minded and open-minded. And for that, many times you need to be in an environment which creates that input. No? And I'm not here precisely in Gaudiya Vaishnav ashram. I'm not precisely in a Gaudiya dham with a Vaishnav community. Of course, there are some Gaudiya Vaishnavs in the campus that I got to meet. There are some groups that organize events. We'll see, maybe we'll be lecturing as well at times. But yeah, most of the students are coming from very diverse backgrounds. They gave us a little, I have it here, orientation book. And there the different students are appearing there. And you can get a short bio of them and know about their backgrounds and interests and and talents. And of course, as you can imagine, most of these young people, not only young, but everyone who comes here, except for me probably, have a very deep intellectual background, scholarly experience. Many of them are very creative, very inspired, very interesting people to meet, basically. So no wonder at times, one, in my case, I could feel some imposter syndrome, like what I'm doing here. At any point, they will know, they will get me. And then to work again on, no, one is not an imposter. For some reason, we are here and everyone will bring its own contribution. Even my own lackings will be a complement to what the other person does not lack, and it's always complementary and reciprocal. So I look forward to discover my role and contribution during this next two semesters. Also, I look forward to being by myself a lot of time, though there will be, of course, lots of time in class and with teachers and students and with roommates sometime, but there will be lots of times with me just reading and writing and thinking and, of course, doing my sadhana, not neglecting my inner life. So I will be spending a lot of time by myself, alone. I usually do that in many other places as well. But I think this will be an aloneness 2.0. And it's very interesting because, as I would think, that will be one of the growing edges I hope to hone and discover. But while I was thinking about that, aloneness, no? Or solitude. I won't use the word loneliness, though loneliness may come to visit, but lots of time to spend with solitude. And as I was thinking about that, these days I started reading this book, which is Consolations from David White. This is part one. I interestingly started reading part two some months ago. And it's basically a series of micro essays with David White, who is a poet and an author also, of different of prose and so on. So he analyzes different words from our alphabet. I think I made a Swami reacts to consolations too, if I'm not mistaken. No? So interestingly enough, the very first word that comes is, maybe the focus is not enough here, but it's alone. So that was very serendipitous. And I went to alone. I'll share a few insights from that because, again, even it's, it was applicable for me here. It may be applicable for you wherever you are. So how can we shift from loneliness to aloneness, which is more connected to solitude? So he says, for example, the first step in spending time alone is to admit how afraid of it we are. So it may be scary not to be alone with myself. Sometimes we hide in the crowd, so to say. We engage in small talk. And that was a thing for me with also with the crowds these days and the hundreds of students. I'm really a shy person. So I'm not someone which is surrounded by hundreds of people and become the soul of the party. But at the same time, I needed to learn to be okay with that. And I don't need to become the soul of the party. And I don't need to force myself into small talk to fit in because I don't feel I'm someone who likes small talk. Let it be what it is. So David White said, being alone is a difficult discipline. A beautiful and difficult sense of being solitary is always the ground from which we step into a contemplative intimacy with the unknown. But the first portal of aloneness is often experienced as a gateway to alienation, grief, and abandonment. So that's the price to pay, to go through the gateway, which feels like loneliness or grief or loss or abandonment or alienation, and then find yourself in a deeper belonging. So I look forward to that gateway that I had a taste of already. He also says a few more words. They are short essays. To be alone for any length of time, so this doesn't mean necessarily you have to come to Harvard to spend time in a cave or be a monk or anything. To be alone for any length of time is to shed an outer skin. The body is inhabited in a different way when we are alone than when we are with others. I repeat that line. The body is inhabited in a different way when we are alone than when we are with others. Alone, we live in our bodies as a question rather than a statement. That's very interesting. And sometimes when we are with others, we live in ourselves as a statement, trying to make a statement to others, to the world about ourselves. But when we are alone, that's more of a question, an ongoing question, to sit with that aloneness and with who we are, or we think we are. The permeability of being alone asks us to reimagine ourselves, to become impatient with ourselves, in a healthy way. And one more beautiful one. One of the elemental dynamics of self-compassion is to understand our deep reluctance to be left to ourselves. I read it again. One of the elemental dynamics of self-compassion is to understand our deep reluctance to be left to ourselves. So, lots of place for growth. So that's something I look forward to cultivate during this next month, till the first semester is over. I have still almost 4 months here. So that's time. But so far I'm experiencing a gradual entering into the dynamics. Again, first disorientation, though the first week was orientation week, but paradoxically there was lots of disorientation in the midst of the orientation. Not Harvard's fault, but just one's recent arrival and trying to figure out again directions and places, entering into a new space, into a new room, and into a new everything. As much as I like to speak about ever new, ever fresh, right? That's the price. Now I'm realizing that's, I have to walk my talk. I write the book called Evolution and Divine Love and the Eternal Becoming and God, Soul and Matter, and everything is fresh and new and it's exciting and thrilling. Okay, walk your talk at Harvard now. and I'm thrown into a world that is, yeah, everything is fresh and new and unknown and uncertain. I'm being willing to sit with that. So, of course, I'm receiving support from many of you, from all of you who know me, lots of prayers and well wishings. And I already received all that, and I'm already receiving that, and I'm having a morning gratitude journal, not to forget that, which I think has been a very interesting, crucial way of starting my day, like to bring in the Om. So let's say Marshall will say the yes, beginning with gratitude, beginning with appreciation, beginning with all the gifts that are already there, blessing my endeavors, my hopes, my aspirations, who I am. And then we can deal with the difficulty, with the things that need to be integrated. So that has been a very interesting thing that I can see even after having started it 2-3 days ago, making a change. Not only a gratitude journal, I'm also doing a night journal on how the day has gone. I've also started to write haiku poetry. I always loved to write poetry, but never wrote haiku, though I've read haiku. And also it's a very interesting adventure experience. Someday maybe we can share separately on that, the philosophical conceptions behind haiku, you know, being given a certain fixed form and that you cannot change, but you can be endlessly creative within a fixed pattern. How that translates into life situations which we cannot change, but we can still find endlessly purpose and meaning in that. Anyhow, another conversation. So just to conclude, because I don't want to make this extremely long, and I have a few other things to do here, but I want to share some of the highlights of the notes I've been taking these days from the first day, from the orientation week, as a way, again, of extending participation and making all this participatory and relational, which I deeply appreciate that there are many, so I may not go through all of them. But many of them, again, I'm just seeing all of that as being many of the same things I love to share and speak about and read and integrate, coming from a different lingo, from a different perspective, from a different angle, and from a different person. And so many incredible people I've already met. So many people are in my mind tentative list to invite eventually to the Free Radical podcast. But let's wait for that. I don't want to become a human doing that fast. So a few touchstones, a few pieces of wisdom. Once you have a thought, interrogate your assumptions. That was powerful. Now, once you have a thought, and we have so many thoughts going in our minds day after day, millions of them, interrogate your assumptions. No? If not the stories we tell ourselves, which are the assumptions? I mean, having a thought, yeah, but the thought comes with assumptions. Interrogate them. Question them. Do not be so sure about them. Do not fall into toxic certainty. So a very beautiful way of crafting that principle. Then they use the acronym. Acronym, you say in English? Yeah, ABC. And in this case, ABC goes for always be connecting. So that's the ABC of life. Let's put it that way. That's the ABC of anything. Always be connecting. That's the foundation. The first letter. The first letters you need to learn. Always be connecting. Then we can talk in detail and in depth about other things. What else? Now, this is a beautiful one. Share with one teacher, a touchstone, she referred to as. Chintamani, as a touchstone. When the going gets rough, and this is from Parker Palmer, if I'm not mistaken, so sorry if I'm indulging in plagiarism here by sharing the quote without referring to the author. When the going gets rough, turn to wonder. And that was on the day that it was getting rough for me. It was about to get very rough. So it was very interesting that this piece of wisdom came on that day. When the going gets rough, turn to wonder. When something seems suffocating, overwhelming, it's all too much in the negative sense, take a moment, pause, breathe, go back, bring presence, and turn to wonder. Invoke curiosity. Bring another element into the tragedy, so to say. A piece of wisdom shared by a dear sister on that day, when the day starts, she told me, let us be love, and to hell with everything that gets in the way. Beautiful. One-liner as a life motto. Let us be love, and to hell with whatever gets in the way. What else? Well, of course, big emphasis on the talks so far and the introductions is the plurality and the pluralism and the multi-faith space, because Harvard Divinity School is not a Christian school. It has been a Christian school in its beginning, but it gradually became secular or more precisely multi-faith and also accommodating agnostic, atheistic students. But many of them, of course, are followers of different spiritual traditions, but all the ones you can imagine and beyond that as well. So there's a lot of emphasis in learning, and not so much learning, as they will say, not learning about other religions, but learning from other religions. Or more precisely, even then, there was a learning with other religions, making it even more participatory, not just like a passive observer from the distance. I'm learning about this, but trying to be permeated, as I would like to say, to cross-pollinate with people, with paths. They emphasize the importance of intellectual humility as well as intellectual courage. No, both of them going hand by hand. And the importance not only of hearing the opinions of other people and that being a way of showing respect to them, but also because I respect you, I will share my view with you. And again, in many of these sharings, we'll have different views. We'll be coming from different epistemologies, different ways of knowing things, different scriptural canons, and they were anticipating that during class you will find yourself at situations where you think differently, and still you hear, and still you respect, and still you appreciate and learn, But that doesn't mean you need to agree with everything, and you can state your opinion and everyone is invited to hold space and listen respectfully. One teacher said at one point, the personal story is the source of connection. And again, I think she's quoting someone here that I missed. I just got to write down the quote. Oh, yeah. Emily Towns, that's the author, is here. The personal story is the source of connection. In other words, radical personalism, as I like to say it. Unless and until you make it personal, it doesn't create connectivity, it doesn't become fully alive. But with personal story comes into the picture where it's something relevant and relatable to you, then it brings life to others and it becomes relevant and relatable to others. The concept of proof of concept, one teacher mentioned. No? We have a concept, but we need the proof of concept. Like the testing is in the pudding, as they will say. Create opportunities to facilitate courage. I really appreciate that one. Because many of us are, again, afraid to step up, afraid to show up, sometimes afraid to speak up for different reasons. So how to facilitate courage? Create opportunities to facilitate courage for ourselves and for others so we can all be vulnerable, which is synonymous for courage, basically. So the teachers were speaking about their role being that, but inviting each of us to also embrace that as our role. Courage facilitators. That's a good way to put it. That's invitation. One teacher was speaking about pre-interpreted versions of religious texts. That hit me because many of us have received that. Many of us have not received the text or an interpretation of text along the reading of the text, but in a pre-interpreted version. So it's already digested and shown in a certain light, with a certain bias, with certain assumptions, and we may take that as objective truth, while it's just a pre-interpreted edition of it, and the importance of deconstructing that. A few more. Bear with me, please. We're almost there. The importance of calling people in rather than calling people out. This was spoken in the context of the notion of restorative justice. Because we have this expression in English, no? They're calling you out. No? But rather than doing that, when we feel the inclination to do that, how we translate or transform the out into an in, and calling them in, make it invitational, participatory. One teacher mentioned that this was based on a lesson she learned from her grandmother, I think, or grandfather. Since there is so much that we don't know, we shouldn't judge others, as simple as that sounds. So say less, and that creates space to do more. So there are more things that we do not know than the things we know. So since there is so much we ignore, we shouldn't give space to judgment, to judgmentalism, basically. So say less, considering that ignorance, and that will create spaciousness to do and be more. Another one-liner that I like was perpetual pursuit of improvement. An ongoing, not obsessive in a toxic way, a need to be more, a need to improve, a need to prove, a need to improve to prove this to others or to me, but the call, the ever-evolving call to unfold into love, we will say in our tradition. That's the ultimate improvement for us, perpetual pursuit of improvement. There was lots of emphasis. This was on the last day of the orientation, if I'm not mistaken, on slow reading. Deep reading means slow reading, like we've recently tried to do in our UK retreat when we just picked one verse from scripture, and this is classic method in our tradition, and just take one verse and analyze it deeply word by word and the implication. It's not just intellectual obsession, but slow, deep reading rather than just passing verse by verse, page by page. So they will say slow down, deep reading, and difficult writing. And difficult in this sense in the terms of you need to think. No? And to think, again, to have thoughts is not the same to think or to be thoughtful. To be thoughtful means to entertain different voices, different opinions, to integrate them, to bring arguments to that, to polish your your view, to allow it to be exposed to diverse opinions and reach some healthy synthesis. That's a whole journey, and that's a whole process. Of course, in a place like Harvard, they are dedicated to that professionally, so to say, to train thinking in different ways. And I'm not saying this is the ultimate form of knowledge, and I'm not here over-absolutizing that on top of divine love. That's why I'm coming at Harvard Divinity School, where there is enough emphasis in spirituality and mysticism and love. But the importance of sitting and with difficulty and learning to think in that context. Someone else mentioned, and I appreciate this idea, how to translate our traditions into care. That's a beautiful way, beautiful replacement for the word preaching. I have nothing against the word preaching, but sometimes it has acquired some heavy weight historically in our and other traditions of proselytizing and evangelizing to the point of being a little bit invasive, intrusive, and even violent. So how to translate our traditions into care? That's our commitment. That's our call. I'm a member of a tradition. Okay, how do you embody your tradition into care in a way that is caring, that is loving, that is healing for others? How do you walk, how you represent, how you present your lineage translated as care? Another teacher, a few more, I'm almost there. Transcend our possibilities to otherwise possibilities. No? Our possibilities to otherwise possibilities. No? Because generally we live into a fixed set of possibilities. This is possible, this is possible, this is not possible. What if we venture to explore otherwise possibilities or what lies beyond the our possibilities box? Someone else say education begins when you are being called into question. Beautiful. Real education. When you are being called into question, again, not like I call you into question, like calling you out, calling in. We are question. Our assumptions are questioned. How we think about things are questioned, and how we can develop our understanding of things. Again, not merely as an intellectual affair, but also we have that faculty, God-given faculty waiting for us to do something with it. At one point, one teacher also talked beautifully about how our identities, especially religious identities, are shaped by how much we think about the other. In other words, if I belong to a tradition and I have some historical adversary in my tradition, how much I think about that adversary, I write arguments, I may even criticize, stigmatize, condemn them, that's shaping my identity, my own sense of identity. And of course, that extends beyond religious groups and adversaries, so to say, but how much we spend time considering enemies or other, that's shaping how we see ourselves. So how will be, for me, the point was, how will be if we end up seeing adversaries and seeing others, in which unique way our identity will be shaped in that case. And again, then the conversation concluded with a lot of conversation of pluralism, which I really appreciated, and I was looking forward to that. The power of difference, as they will say, the importance of situating yourself at an environment where all your assumptions are not just totally reaffirmed and reassured by the environment, like a reinforcing of your set beliefs. That can be dangerous. And for me, that's why it's very healthy for any person to be exposed to diversity and to see what comes from that. I'm not against, okay, you have sadhu sangha and you want people like-minded, like-hearted people who share your faith, who share your heart. That's beautiful. But also it's beautiful to expose ourselves to something different from that, to see what emerges from that. Because if not, sometimes in the name of Swajatiya sadhu sangha, as we will call it, like-minded association, sometimes it can end up in a reinforcing of dogma and belief and of my own set of assumptions and prejudice, and you end up associating, getting together with those who just do not question you at all. So that's the value and power of difference, as they will say. And that's why at one point someone defined pluralism in one of the conversations as being a little bit uncomfortable all of the time. Which is a funny way to make a very blunt truth. Pluralism entails some degree of ongoing discomfort that you are not fully allowed to enter into your comfort zone when things are as you like, or when things like you, if that could be at all possible. but being a little bit uncomfortable, a little bit, not excessively, all of the time. In other words, there's always something to harmonize, to accommodate, something to integrate, or something that may not be possible to fully agree with and that has to find its place as well. I cannot just erase and cancel the other person. So how to sit with discomfort? No, what's the epistemological power of difference? Again, epistemological is a nerdy word to how we know things, epistemology. So how we can get to know different things by way of difference, by way of exposing ourselves to people thinking differently about religion, about humanity, body, gender, history, anthropology, society, so many, anything and everything. Again, without becoming extremely overwhelmed and having our foundations and roots properly nourished, but part of the nourishment is an exposure to diversity. So that's where I am now, in that unique land of exposure to a wide variety of diversity, a lot of also of commonality and alignment, of course, and that's the beauty, be it of it, unity and diversity. There is a lot of common ground, of emphasis on the unity and in the interconnectedness of all of us, and all of us looking for a better world and peace and love, these shared core values. And on the foundation of that, let's say, non-dual interest, a wild bouquet of pluralism and diversity that not only me, but also me, I'm invited to learn from, integrate, allow myself to be cross-pollinated by, and hopefully allowing a new necessary version of me to emerge. We all need a new necessary version. We all have a new version of ourselves waiting to be upgraded, to be manifest. So that's so far what I want to share today as part of my first week in Harvard, which felt like more than a week because there was so much newness, new content, new experiences, lots of things to integrate. And I'm sure still my system consciously and unconsciously is processing all of that, and it will continue to do so. And I look forward to continue sharing with you my adventures over here and making you part of it. And hopefully you're feeling part of it and making it a joint journey, not an isolated one. As I said, I'm not sure how often will I be able to share some of these reports, but look forward to the next one when the classes are starting with the dynamics of meeting the professors and sharing in the classroom begin and the writing and the exercise. And so not only all of that, but what will emerge from the inside in connection to that outer input. So thank you for your time. Thank you for stay until this moment, whatever you feel you need to share in the comment section, whatever thoughts, however, all of this that I'm sharing is applicable to you, because I'm trying to not make it just self-referential and dangerously self-preferential, but to speak about my experience, of course, in a way that hopefully relate to yours in one way or another. So also let me know in your comments how this touches your heart and your life. But so far, we put a pause, a rest here, and this was my first week at Harvard. See you soon.